This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm here with Pravin. Pravin, thank you very much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, please?
Absolutely. Arman, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. My name is Pravin Nara. I'm the founder and CEO of Tech.us. We build custom software for companies from SaaS applications to mobile apps to artificial intelligence. And we've been doing artificial intelligence projects for the last 8 years. As a matter of fact, we built a chatbot for a multi-billion dollar healthcare company over 5 years ago. I know now AI is really popular. Many people call themselves AI experts, but we've been there and done that for many years now. And we are based in Silicon Valley, and we serve customers across the globe, while we focus mainly in the United States. I have a team of really talented people that I'm super proud of. We focus on solving customers' real problems rather than just building technology for the sake of building technology. That's why customers stay with us for many, many years. I still have a customer who has been with me for approaching 22 years, maybe cross 22 years now. Mm-hmm. And several customers stay with us for many, many years.
That's great. So you have done AI technologies and projects. You have worked with AI. Different aspects of AI, of course, exist. Nowadays, you hear more about generative AI. Right, so this Gen AI is what is hot at the moment because of the Open AI came and just provided some meaningful result for majority of people who could understand and could really see it in action, and that was exciting. Now, based on what you have seen in the last year or two, and based on what you have done in the last 8 years, as you mentioned, how do you see we will go from here in the next 5 to 10? What's your expectation? What do you expect to see with regard to AI projects and companies, working with AI, and some projects that you think will be probably best suited to these kind of projects and these kind of technologies that will bring the best result to companies?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we are seeing in AI world is an acceleration of innovation that is like super surpassing anybody's expectations. One of the things that most of the people in technology world least expected was AI to become so creative. If you think about Midjourney's of the world, AI is able to create art that people didn't expect to happen anytime soon. People thought, creativity would happen 10 years down the road, but it literally happened within 1 or 2 years of since that prediction was made. We expect to see continued acceleration of the technology. And the beauty of exponential technologies like artificial intelligence is that it grows really slow initially, but takes off once it hits a threshold, because exponential curve is essentially 2 to the power of 0. So 2 to the power of 1 is 2, 2 to the power of 2 is 4, 8, 16, 32, and 64, right? So initially when it's like 2 to the power of 1, it just takes like 2% of the market share. People don't really feel it. 4%, people don't really feel it. 8%, some large companies started feeling, oh my God, my business is being taken away by, take Uber as an exponential company, for example, right? and then they start feeling it. Once it hits 16 and 32, most of the businesses, business models are disrupted, right? We expect AI to disrupt business models like that as well. Think about hyper-personalization. We believe generative AI gives an opportunity to personalize many things at a granular level, from education to healthcare to shopping experience to music. I was at an event at United Nations where I met Sal Khan, who is the founder of Khan Academy. And he was talking about how they're using ChatGPT to create a personalized coach, personalized AI coach agent for every single student, because different students are in different stages of learning. And by giving them a unique learning experience, by knowing what they, where they are, what their challenges are, what their learning styles are, you're able to customize education to fit exactly to their need. And imagine that amplified by millions of AI agents. I don't think you can manually do that. So AI provides an opportunity to customize solutions at a much larger scale, right? So I do expect that to happen. I also expect something I call invisible AI. People will be interacting with artificial intelligence without even realizing they are. I mean, the simplest example is browsing Netflix or searching Google, right? We are using AI, but we don't realize it. But that'll happen a lot more in many other things in our day-to-day life. And also robotics is going to go through an explosion, in my opinion. So I think there's going to be a global AI race. And I am confident that United States has the resiliency. Definitely China is playing a big role. In certain areas, they are ahead of United States. But I truly believe in the resiliency of United States in beating other players in the marketplace.
Now, if you think about, I mean, definitely, as you mentioned to me before, you know, you have done over 1,000 projects in the last two decades, right? And you have seen the development of these projects and applications and products and modernization. So each project by itself or product application coming to life, they have a life cycle. They have, you go through a number of stages, phases, processes, and then you get to the next phase. How do you see AI can change that kind of cycle, if it can? Or do you feel like that part will be the same way we will start developing applications before AI or post AI, for AI projects or non-AI projects? Doesn't matter. We need to still develop those applications, products, and we will continue doing the same thing. What's your take on that?
I believe AI is already disrupting software development and will continue to disrupt software development a lot more. I know there is AI that can write code for you, but it's still not fully mature. It can write small pieces of code for, let's say, a function. But you can't really use AI to build a full application where there is complex correlation and interconnectivity between different modules, dealing with large sums of data, etc. But it'll get there, right? So every software developer, especially people who are building SaaS, I think should consider how AI is going to impact their business, and also think about how they can use AI to accelerate product adoption. I'll give you one example. Because AI can personalize things so much, it gives new opportunity to SaaS developers. Imagine they were going after one industry initially. Now you are able to test 2, 3, 4, 5 different industries at the same time because you're able to use AI to personalize your product for different markets. So instead of launching it for a narrow market, now you can launch it to multiple narrow markets without much effort and time as it used to take before, right? The companies that do that, I believe, are going to benefit. The companies that don't are going to fall behind. So that's one use case. another use case. For example, while AI is not there yet to build complex code, it can definitely write test cases by analyzing your code. It can think of edge cases that normal QA people, quality assurance engineers may not be able to think about. Using such capabilities of AI to increase the number of cycles they're able to do within a period of time, they're able to iterate more. And the more you iterate, the more you ship your code, the more you take feedback from your customers and get that feedback back into your product, the more you succeed. So that's what I see with AI.
Now, slightly different topic related to what we discussed. So normally companies think about SaaS companies, think about product, bringing the product to life. And of course, they think about minimizing the initial time so they can't get to market faster to get customers' input before they build too much and spend too much time and money on the product, right? So that's the discussion of MVP, as we all know. But at the same time, there is a trade-off. You can make only one time the first impression, meaning that if you come to market with a product that is not really that great, and that's your MVP, you may lose the opportunity to really get the first impression again from the customers because you already have made it. And it may not be where you want it to be. It's not like super impressive. That's the dilemma that many of the SaaS companies have. They get the idea that I have to minimize it, come to market with minimum viable products. So getting feedback from customers before I spend too much money. At the same time, what if I came to market and that was not impressive enough? And now I have a hard time to bring market back to look at my version 2 that is really impressive now. How would you really kind of think about that process? Do you have a different process in mind, or from your perspective, that can be still managed very well with some caveats?
That's a great point. As you said, first impression is essentially the best impression, right? So you want to make that first impression, but at the same time, a startup has limited resources, time, money, and energy, people. So you want to minimize those resources to get maximum results. How do you do that? Minimum viable product, or MVP, is a very common concept used in building lean products that meet specific needs of your target customers. But I believe in something called minimum WOW product, where you need to WOW your customers. It's not like basic core thing, but you need to solve a problem that has not been solved by your competitors in the market. If it's the same problem you're solving, you need to do it so much better that your target customers would go like, wow, this is so much better, right? So that's one thing. And the second thing is launching the product to a small group of people so that you're getting your product exposed to a limited number of people, so that if it's not meeting the market needs, now you didn't burn the bridges with a lot more customers, right? The third thing I would say is when you launch your product, definitely consider what your target customers' expectations are. Because we now have trillion-dollar companies like Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, the user experience of their products is so much better. So the bar is really high. So you cannot build an MVP that solves a problem but has a sucky user experience. Mm-hmm. People are going to come visit and then they'll never come back to you. So that customer experience and user experience needs to be really good in addition to solving their problems.
You have been probably in many occasions, in many situations, that it has been about, should I build it myself? Should I outsource this part to a third party outside to build it for me? Should I augment it, build part of it, and then work with the team outside? What is your advice based on everything you have seen? That what are the cases that when you see a SaaS company that you know, I'm building a product now. It really makes sense for them to consider also working with a company, you know, outside with, you know, a third party to build a product. Does it limit their risk? Does it minimize their risk? Does it do a better job in bringing the product to the market? Does it have any big advantage? Or from your perspective, it depends on the phase of and the size of the SaaS product and the SaaS company. Maybe at one phase, at one size, it does not make sense to do it. Maybe for another size company, it makes perfect sense to do it. What's your take on it based on the experiences that you have had?
That's a very insightful question, in my opinion. So I think it depends on not only phase of the project, but also where the entrepreneurs are in their entrepreneurial journey. I have had several entrepreneurs who had amazing ideas, but they're not technology people. So if they went and tried to hire technology team to build the product, they wouldn't know what, you know, if they're hiring the right people or not. So the product ends up suffering. I also found people who didn't know what are all the skill sets necessary to build a great product. Think about building a house. You need a wide range of skills. You need a mason, you need a carpenter, you need an electrician, you need an architect, you need a painter, and there are like dozens of other skill sets that are necessary to build a beautiful, great-looking, safe, stable home. Same thing applies to software as well. You can't just hire an iOS developer and expect them to build a great mobile app. That's what entrepreneurs who don't have technology experience unfortunately do, and then suffer from an inferior product. Mm-hmm. The advantage of having an outsourced company like us or other outsourced technology providers, of course, you need to choose the right company. That's absolutely important. When you go to the right company, they will have all these additional resources that they can bring to the table. For a startup, for example, you don't need a full-time architect. You don't need a full-time security expert. You don't need a full-time UI UX expert. So it doesn't make sense for a new entrepreneur to hire all these skill sets. But when you go to an outsourced provider like us, who are specialized in building software products, they can minimize your spend, but also maximize the success of the product. So I believe choosing, first deciding where you are in your journey, choosing the right company, and outsourcing what you need to outsource is the right thing. There are also cases where you may have engineers in your company. You don't have the UI UX designer. You don't have the security expert. In those cases, it may make sense to keep the core development in your company and outsource these other peripheral services to a vendor like ours.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So you're right. So it's not about just I have access to talent. It's also about how to glue them together, how to really bring the whole project well defined, how to understand the dependencies, and how to really, you know, put all of these resources in the right way for the right phase. And sometimes even it may not make sense to really hire a full-time person for something that you may not need all the time, full-time for a long time, right? So all of those resource management kind of things come to place as well. But I think the main point that you mentioned, that when an entrepreneur is starting to build a product, but he or she is not necessarily a technology, a product person, that's where you can add a lot of value. Because then you can really get that started and create the system and the product. And then that gives the entrepreneur more time, more insight, more knowledge, more experience to get at one point to the point that they want. When you look at the market and then you see software has played a big role during the last few decades. You know, it was almost non-existent in our time, right? So when I was 18, for example, I do remember MS-DOS was a thing. It was just very brand new. Personal computer came to life. And so during my early college years, it was like personal computer, you know, getting into businesses the way people thought that first it's just something that stays at home. And then it took over building applications and software. And people moved from the previous generation of mini computers and mainframes into personal computers. And then Windows came, and then web and internet came, and data kind of merged into internet, and then cloud computing started. And then all of these cloud technologies came to market to a scale and to let us do things that previously maybe was not possible before cloud age. But at the same time, always there is a delay. It's not just because the technology is here, everyone is using it. Sometimes we may get the best use of technology that actually we invented 10 years ago, and now we are utilizing it. So there is a time between the time that the technology is available and the time that actually technology is helping us to do a better job in what we do and increase the productivity. From your perspective, are we moving too fast? Still, you go to companies that still they are kind of working on the technologies that maybe in 2015, 16 came to market, and still people not utilizing it enough. The examples might be some modern cloud technologies like microservices, for example, you know, like serverless technologies. Have they been really utilized yet, even though they started, you know, showing up in the market probably 8 years ago, 7 years ago? Or do you feel like the pace is fine and this new technology is coming will be utilized at a faster pace than before? Because the pace is obviously faster than 10 years ago.
Yeah. The thing is, technology is definitely moving fast. And for certain companies, it's really difficult to continuously go with the innovations that are happening in technology. So there are some companies that are going to be so far ahead in implementing those technologies ahead of the curve. There are going to be certain companies and certain industries that are far behind in the technology adoption curve. Think about healthcare. Think about transportation. There are many other industries where the adoption is much slower, either because of the availability of technology resources, tech people within their companies and industries, or because of the government regulations that need to be followed when they implement these technologies. So that's going to stay. But what we all can do to really be ahead of the curve is within your industry, within your competitors, be one of those earlier adopters that embrace new software, new technology, new artificial intelligence, because then you will have a competitive advantage that others will not have. Even in other areas, think about something very simple like marketing. Companies that adopted Facebook marketing when Facebook first started offering marketing got so much more value for pennies on the dollar. Same thing happened in Google. Like when Google first came, for one penny, you used to be in the top of Google. And so definitely there is an advantage by being an early adopter. But the way I would recommend is don't bet your house on a new technology. I follow resource allocation. So think about your investment strategy, right? There is some amount of investment that I keep that is like stable, like very reliable. There is some part of investment, a bucket of investments that are growth investments. And there is a small percentage that is like risky investment, less than 10%. If I lose that risky investment, it's okay. But that can also have tenfold, hundredfold growth if everything turns out, right? So there's a big risk, but there's also a big reward. So some technologies would be like that. So you need to kind of stay grounded in what your core business is and keep the core things running, but also have a certain amount of budget allocated to this new innovation and experimentation and then pick the best ones that are working. You try three different technologies, two didn't work, one worked. Implement that for in a much larger scale.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's very pragmatic and very logical approach that you're suggesting, and makes perfect sense. In general, the adoption speed hasn't changed, right? So there is a lag. The technology, new technologies pace has accelerated. And that's at least my feeling, that we are bringing new technologies faster to market, but we are absorbing it at the same pace because there are some limitations around that. And your answer, the way I understand, is, well, it depends on the segment. Some segments can actually adopt it faster. Some segments may not. And there are some companies that should and can really go with the new technologies and take the advantage over competitors and outwin, you know, the competitors, or some are not really doing that. And maybe that kind of brings more a wider spectrum of the adoption. Am I correct in my understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to stay, in my opinion, Arman, because companies that have invested a lot of resources in implementing a technology, let's take one example. Let's say somebody implemented Salesforce, right? Salesforce has been there for over two decades, and in some businesses, it's ingrained in everything that they do in their business, right? Imagine there is a brand new technology that is definitely far more superior than Salesforce, right? For a company to switch to a new technology is not easy, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to switch just because there is, you know, it's 10% faster, 20% faster. They will switch when there is such a big magnitude that the current technology doesn't serve, right? Imagine that it's 10x cheaper or 10x more powerful, you know, then they will probably switch. So I think people cannot easily switch just because the technology is available. It also depends on what their focus is, how much resources they want, and where they want to go. What I would find is companies that have not invested so much in older technologies will still have an advantage of starting with a better technology in the same example, right? A company, a new startup can start with a new CRM rather than going with a Salesforce because they don't have a lot of integrations already done. And they can take advantage. So I don't think the technology should be slowed down just because certain companies cannot adopt to it. The innovation is going to happen at whatever phase that, you know, speed and pace that the technology will evolve. And companies that can take advantage will continue to take advantage. One example I can give you is airlines. Think about the airlines that we have in the United States. Many of them are old, right? Because these were purchased like 20, 30 years ago by American Airlines, Delta, and United, etc. So they're outdated. You go to India, I believe they purchased like $100 billion worth of airplanes a year ago, or placed an order for it. So you see the airplanes, many of them are brand new airplanes with much newer features, right? Same thing will happen in companies that start new, because India was a later adopter of air transportation than the United States. They have newer technology. I think same thing will happen in companies. And again, the companies that will have better technology, I think will have a cutting edge advantage.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned AI, and you mentioned that, you know, there are new techniques and some of these AI technologies that are now available. There are companies that may feel one way or the other, for one reason or the other, AI is not there yet. It may not be the right time to get into AI because some privacy issues still need to be figured out around AI. Maybe it's because AI processing is too expensive now and not yet optimized. So the infrastructure cost that takes to run AI, maybe it's not yet ready for the prime time, or many other reasons that people may feel even from functionality, it needs to be polished a little bit more, gain more maturity. And that's make them feel like I should still wait until I really leverage AI. And it's not the optimized, the most, I would say, cost optimized or the best time to get involved into AI project. What's your take on it? How would you persuade, if you would like to persuade them, or you may say, no, that's, you know, most of the time these rationales are really correct. What's your take on this kind of approach?
Well, my advice to entrepreneurs and business owners is please don't sit on the sidelines on AI. This is such a powerful technology that it's going to transform the world in new ways that you can't even imagine today. And people who sit on the sidelines may save some money in the short term, but it's kind of like a short-term gain, long-term loss. You will lose the opportunity to iterate, to see what is working and what is not working. Again, go back to my recommendation of not betting your house on a new technology, right? So don't put all your eggs in AI. But if you have 10x, take one or two eggs and put in AI and try new things and see what others are doing, because you will learn things. Even if that test of AI failed, you will learn some things that will help you improve your next project better. And again, this is one of those exponential technologies that you just can't ignore. There are so many things that AI can do that we can't even contemplate today. And so such innovations are going to happen in your company as well. And unless you're experimenting, you won't know. I'll give you one example in healthcare. You can today use AI to identify, diagnose diabetes using a change in your tone, in your voice. Like, think about how non-invasive that is. Think about how many people could benefit from it if they have an app that can do that on their phone. There are billions of people who don't have access to healthcare. They don't have access to a doctor, but you can give access to that technology to people on a broad scale. Of course, it's still in experimental stage, but the technology is there. So there are good things that will happen with AI, but there are also bad things that will happen with AI, with any new technology, with printing, which is such a basic thing. Some people used it for a good thing. Some people used it for bad things, right? Same thing will happen with AI, but you cannot sit on the sidelines, because this will be ingrained in every business like electricity is. And think about any business that resists to using electricity. Like, we would not be able to speak today. I'm sitting in San Jose and you're sitting somewhere else, and we are having this conversation. The camera is working because of electricity. The computer is working. The microphone is working because of electricity. So I believe we just cannot be in denial of certain technologies. I know that's probably a strong word, but AI is such an important technology that people can't sit on the sidelines on. I don't know. I have very strong opinions on this.
Sure. So it's a new utility of the new world from your perspective. It would be a utility. It's just would be everywhere. You cannot really just play with it and not work with it, because then you are losing a very infrastructural kind of capability in everyday life.
Absolutely. It'll be ubiquitous. Like, think about anybody resisting to use a mobile phone or a computer. They are going to be at a disadvantage. So most people, there may be some exceptions, right? There may be some exceptions in certain industries where, AI doesn't make that much of a difference. But for most entrepreneurs, I think it's crucial to get onto the AI bandwagon, experiment, and test what works and implement what works in your business.
Great insight. It has been great. Promise to have you on this show. I would like to ask my last question, as I normally do, and see if you have any recommendation on the book any book, personal, professional, business, that you may find it, you may have found it very useful to you and you wanted to share with the audience. Also, if particular events you may say have been very useful for you that you would like to share with the audience.
Sure. One of the books, I mean, there are many books. I love books. I have hundreds of books. I listen to audiobooks because that's much faster for me. So I read or listen to hundreds of books every year, whether it's in short form or long form. There's one book that I really love, which is called The One Thing by a guy called Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, I think. It's a great book because what they talk about is some people try to dibble on too many different things, but people who are most successful focus on one thing and they go really deep in that one thing, and that's what makes them excellent. Think about the most successful people out there. Bill Gates, right? He went into computers and focused on that one thing, right? Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, probably is an outlier. He went into multiple things. But when he started initially, right, he went into one thing, did really well at PayPal, then went on to Tesla, and of course, then he expanded from there. If you look at most successful people, think of anybody like Taylor Swift, right? She went into music, focused on music. Now more than 53% of American adults are fans of her, right? So that book gives that clarity on how you can focus on your one thing and how you can allocate time. There's something called, you know, time blocks that they recommend. For example, I used to have many smaller blocks in my calendar for 15 minutes, 30 minutes. But they recommend having large chunks of time blocked on your calendar to work on this one thing. So yeah, I think it's a great book. I would strongly recommend it.
Great. Again, thanks a lot. It was great having you here and thanks for joining us.
Arman, great being here. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.